going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And we welcome you to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw. C70 is about at C70 on Twitter. With me, Alan Medlock from Red Dirt, Red Bird, and A Medlock 1 on Twitter. And coming to you on, you know, the morning before Game 3 of the World Series. Cardinals are obviously not in it. But before we get into the Cardinal talk, Alan, you know, a lot of people on Twitter have said recently over the last couple of days that it makes them feel a little bit better about the NLCS, just watching how Washington seemingly is this team that's just not going to be denied. Does it make you feel a little bit better about how the Cardinals were manhandled to see Houston getting the kind of the same treatment?
No, yeah, without a doubt. And it's, you know, it's one of those, you can go back a couple shows ago, I think, or even last week to where, Game 3, you knew that you were up against a buzzsaw. You know, you felt like things didn't work your way, go your way in one or two, even when you pitched well, and it's going to be an uphill battle. But then Game 3, when they came out and scored all those early runs, and you just knew that you were in some serious trouble, you knew that something special may be happening. I never expected them to go in and win two in Houston, though. You know, even playing well, I thought if you split, you get back to Washington, then I feel like you're probably in the driver's seat in the series if you're 1-1 getting back to Washington. But they're just not being denied right now. I mean, they're completely silencing the Houston bats, and they're taking advantage of any mistakes Houston makes, and they're getting the big hits. And that's usually the recipe for success. I really like how Martinez is handling the Washington bullpen. I'm a big fan of the 80s style. Your ace goes 1-4-7. You know, that hasn't been the fad in 20 plus years, but that's how it was when I was growing up.
Right.
What I really liked how he did that, though, is not necessarily went with their ace, but he went with their, you know, their number two, probably, or their number three, 2A, basically. I don't know how that even makes sense, but you go with Corbin in game one, and possibility in game two and three, knowing that you want to save him for that, you know, game four start. And if it gets pushed, you have Corbin in game seven as well. I don't know. I like how they rolled the dice on that and how he's handled their bullpen in particular. He, I guess the plan was to cut it down to 2 to 3 guys, and they definitely have. And it's been pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing. If, you know, and that's what we said with the Cardinals is if they can get into Washington's bullpen, especially the, you know, they only have one or two guys they can trust. And, you know, the idea is they can't run those guys out there all the time. Well, they could in the the one with the Cardinals because the starters would go seven or farther. So it didn't matter. But, you know, and I was telling somebody last night, I said what the Nationals really need is a blowout one way or another to let guys like Doolittle and Hudson, you know, not pitch, you know, to get a little bit of rest and not have to pitch. And they got that. They got that in game two. So they could use people like Fernando Rodney and others that might be a little bit weaker, but, you know, he had enough of a lead that they didn't have to worry about it. We expected the pitching on both sides, and we're just not getting it on Houston's side. You know, Cole did not pitch as well as he could have, as we've thought. Verlander pitched pretty well until that last, you know, he gave up that third home run, and then everything kind of started to snowball. But, you know, we thought we'd see a little bit more out of Cole and Scherzer. Scherzer kind of got worked his way out of some jams that he created. But overall, yeah, it's tough to say Houston's got any kind of edge. Now, you know, they could come out tonight and win, and maybe that changes the momentum a little bit or changes the narrative. But I mean, when you look at the fact that Washington went into Houston and beat Cole and Verlander, man, it's hard to see how Houston can win this series. Now, it can happen, but it's going to be a real long shot.
Yeah, it's one of those to where, kind of like with the Cardinals, Houston just has to try to get it back to Houston. Then you feel like the then you feel like it's in your favor again.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I will be. I want to see a long World Series. To see a long World Series, I feel like you'll have to see Houston win. I mean, I don't know why I feel that way. That if it goes that long, I think the advantage kind of swings back to Houston. But I want Washington to win. So I'm torn on this one. You know what I mean? One of those, because I don't want them to necessarily win it in 4 or 5, but I'd rather them win it over everything else. So yeah, I mean, that's all Houston can kind of hope for is get it back to hopefully if you can get another chance at with Cole and Verlander and see what you can happen. If they don't hit any better than they can, it's going to be the same thing as the Cardinals, though. It's going to be a futile attempt, because yeah, that's the biggest issue right now. They just can't score.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, especially in game one and a couple chances in game two, we saw that the last inning, especially against Strasburg, you know, Houston's able to put runners on, which is more than the Cardinals did maybe, but they can't get that hit that they need. You know, that sixth inning at Strasburg, 2 on, 1 out, and then you get a little pop up and a strikeout. You know, if you get that, the hit that you need, you know, maybe things are different, but they hadn't been able to get it. And that's mainly a credit to the pitching staff of Washington, I think, for the most part. It's also some part of offense these days. I mean, you look at some of the numbers that people were throwing out after the NL or both league championship series. You know, it's like, you know, teams average with runners in scoring position, like Washington was like 350, but the Cardinals and the Yankees and the Astros both hit under 200 in those positions. And it's, I don't know if that's just the way the game is now. I don't know if that's, you know, just a byproduct of pitching or, you know, small samples, but for the most part, it doesn't feel like people are getting those hits that they need to. And, you know, that's kind of goes into the criticism of the game right now of, you know, big hit or strikeouts. It's not a whole lot of stringing hits together, which is kind of what you need with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, especially in the series like this. I mean, you saw it. You saw the importance of putting the ball in play there in that seventh inning. You know, you know, Suzuki hits that ball, hits the bomb, and then Houston's on their heels a little bit, and you see the mistakes that a good defender in Bregman made. You know, in two plays, and then the merry-go-round happens at that point. So that's the benefits of contact. You know what I mean? I understand the game is trending in another direction, which I think it'll probably come back a little bit more so to the, you know, the spray hitting and all those things. But we can get into that. You know, we'll have plenty of time in the offseason to get into that. But yeah, I mean, you saw the importance of just simply putting the ball in play that inning. And, you know, it turned into a huge inning and, you know, essentially nothing hit incredibly hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's tough to win when you give a good team 4 outs or more, which is a nice little segue, I think, to our next topic, which is the fact that the Gold Glove announcements came out yesterday and the Cardinals had a nominee at 6 of the 9 positions. Jack Flaherty, which was a bit of a surprise, I think, to most people. I don't think anybody was ever thinking that.
I never thought that at all. You know, so when that was announced, I was like, that's awesome. You know, it's a, you know, incredible athlete. And I always like when they get rewarded for those things.
Yeah, I always remember, but you always thought of, you know, back in the day when Greg Maddux was always winning it. I mean, you kind of knew that, right? Because you would see him, you know, get off the mound and make plays. And I just don't remember. I mean, Flaherty's a fine athlete and indefinitely probably had some moments, but I don't remember anything standing out. In fact, you know, the Cardinals, even when they put out their little, you know, clip gif of, you know, congratulating him, everybody else got a you know, some sort of defensive play and he had a strikeout. It's like they couldn't even find a play that kind of stood out for him. But, you know, pitching fielding is a little bit different than any other position too. So, and hopefully he gets that. But Flaherty nominated there. Yadier Molina behind the plate, which I think was not the given that it used to be. I mean, Yadi's definitely still got an impact on the running game. He still obviously has a huge impact on the pitching staff, but it does feel like his, you know, behind the plate has slipped a little bit. I mean, it's still good, but I don't know that it would have been a huge surprise had he been left off the ballot or not in the top 3. on the voting there this year. I feel like he's starting to show a little bit. And we saw it in the playoffs, of course, the voting was done by then, but you know, we saw that some in the playoffs as well, that he just doesn't seem to get in front of everything he used to, or, you know, isn't quite the, you know, legend that he was defensively earlier in his career.
Probably speaks more to heritage, you know what I'm saying? Nostalgia in that situation, but I don't know if you could ever convince me that he's not one of the top three best defensive catches in the National League. So that's why I'm not really surprised. Here's the thing with me, and I know that you can poke holes in the Gold Glove Awards, and that's the trendy thing to do. Mm-hmm. You see it. You see it all over Twitter. You see it all over Facebook. But I love the Gold Glove. And I understand that there's some things that go into it that aren't necessarily to show the best defender in one of those things. And some of that may be the fact that they're contracted with Rawlings, that, you know, that they get on the list. I don't care about that. I mean, there's very few times where I'm like, oh, that's a terrible pick. You know, there are some that are egregious, and we all know the Palmeiro and stuff like that. And sometimes I feel like you have to hit enough to get on the list. Still yet, I love it. I love the awards, the classics that have been around a long time. I miss the Rolaids Relief Man of the Year award. You know, those, that was always awesome. Mm-hmm. Getting your weekly, getting the Sports Illustrated weekly and seeing the rankings on that. You know, that those are the ones, it's nostalgic to me because I like them, because that's what I think, those make the game fun and make the offseason fun. I think that probably some of those things probably play into Molina getting it. But like I said, you're never going to convince me that he's not one of the top three. When I looked at the list, though, I would think that he's the favorite to win that one, and that Wong's the favorite to win it at second. Go ahead.
Well, no, it's fine. I'll go ahead and talk. The other ones were, okay, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, Colton Wong.
I think it was deserving. You know, like I said, there's an argument to be poked that you can poke holes in that, but I think that he's worthy.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to say that it wasn't. I think it wouldn't have been a surprise if he had slipped off of that just because he's not where he was. But still, what, you know, 80% of Yadier Molina is better than most.
100%. That's basically my thought too. The what it was funny when you're talking about Flaherty is, I don't know if we'll ever know. Or if you can even find out, there's maybe a way to find out. I would love to know the metrics they use on pitching and how they award the guys, because I've never really understood either. I'm just like, you know, that's it's crazy. You never know.
Well, I'm gonna double check, but I'm pretty sure the Gold Glove voting is managers and players, so that could be as much as I like the guy, and I think he plays well. You know, I mean, let me pull that up real quick. But I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And so that's, you know, I don't think it's just a, you know, rank three guys or something like that. I think, coaches and managers. Okay, so it's not even the players. Players don't even get into that. Okay. It's just coaches and managers. So
I didn't know if that had changed. I knew that had been that way forever, but I wasn't sure if that had changed at all. And Yadi goes in that category to me. I think there are two players right now. Well, I guess you could say three. There are three guys that you're going to see on every top three. That's going to be Molina, Hayward, and Andrelton Simmons. You know, because those are the ones that when you see it, but when you see it, it's one of those, you're just like, we see him play every day and he's a defensive game changer. You know, that's before the spreadsheets come out to prove that one way or the other, they may not have been as good. Like Andrew Jones back in the day was the best center fielder. And, you know, he got slow and he got big, and that affected him. But he was also one of those guys that was one of those votes that, bad year or not, he's one of the best three defenders out there. You know what I'm saying? One of those situations.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for the best guys, then yeah, you probably go to the Fielding Bible and things like that that are a little bit more metrically based. But I don't think that the Gold Glove is something just to be casually dismissed. I think, you know, obviously the players still want to win it. And it's still, like you said, with the nostalgia, still has cachet. it's still a solid measurement. I mean, again, you know, Colton Wong didn't win last year, so, but that doesn't mean that, you know, DJ LeMahieu was not good. I mean, he is good. He's nominated again this year for the Yankees. It's just that, so it's not that, you know, you get in that top three, you're probably pretty good. And it's nice that they do that. You know, it used to be that they just announced the team and you didn't have any idea.
Yeah.
You know, at least now you get to these nominees and you could see, okay, Colton Wong didn't win, but he was right up there. So,
sure.
You know, it's something.
Well, and that was, that's one of my complaints too about how it's perceived is they're like, hey, you know, they know the winner. They're just doing this for suspense. Well, who cares? That adds to it. I mean, we find something out, you know, in the day we, you know, in the off day, that's the beauty of the game to me. All these teams knew who they were going to hire. The ones that hired managers knew who they were going to hire. They waited till the off day. You know, the Gold Glove Award. It's announced. Yeah. The finalists are announced in the off day. Who cares? It's building suspense. Something I saw yesterday that I thought, is it really that big of a deal? You know, the announcements. I was excited to see it. Obviously, you were too, because you text me right away and say, hey, look, we get to talk about this tomorrow. And I was like, I was excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that it, I mean, it's just like the same with the writers are doing with the Cy Young and MVP votes now. I mean, you know, years ago, we didn't have any idea until, you know, the vote came out, and then you could see the votes. You knew who came out where. But, you know, now at least, yeah, you're going to know real quick, okay, one of these three guys is going to win. And they put it out, what, a couple weeks before the actual vote comes out? I mean, they may do that this week. I don't know. And they know the winner. I mean, when you're putting out the nominees, you know the winner because you're taking the top three, so you know who that is. And that's, but you're right. I mean, it stretches it a little. It gives it a little bit of something else to do in the winter, which is good. Like you said, it doesn't really distract from the World Series because it is on the off day, and you know it gives something for those fans of teams that aren't in it to kind of look at. Let's go quickly. Let's go at least mention the rest of them. Like I said, Goldschmidt at first, Wong at second, DeJong at short, and then Harrison Bader in the outfield. It was funny to my mind. I started thinking, I was like, man, Dave Duncan would have just loved this team. I mean, you got three Gold Glove possibilities on the infield. And then I remembered the team that he did have, you know, where he had Pujols at first and Roland at third and Renteria at short. And I think probably Vina and, you know, some others at second. It's like he had Gold Glove quality anyway. I don't know that this is any big deal, but it's kind of cool to see in a really a testament to how important they made that defense to see, you know, three quarters of your infield. And really, you know, when you put pitcher and catcher in there as well, I mean, it's five of the six that are, you know, inside, you know, not outfielders, possible Gold Glove winners. I think that's saying something about what they wanted to do with this team and the defense this year.
Oh, absolutely. I loved it. I was excited about the announcements yesterday. Anybody who listens to the show knows the one announcement that I would have been mad if it wasn't made, because I feel like he's worthy and I feel like he's worthy to win it. And I'm afraid he's going to get screwed on it. That's DeJong. Because I was just afraid that the offense may have made a big difference on that, but
sure.
I don't feel like it did. And I think that you have recent memory issues with DeJong because, and I'm not even sure that the national narrative is the same as ours, because we see it day in, day out, and saw that he struggled, saw that he was simply out of gas. He never took it in the field with him. And that speaks volumes in a player to me. So that was the one that I wanted to see. So when I saw that, I was excited. I was like, anybody else can be on that list. I go, but I'm going to be disappointed if DeJong is not. And I feel like he is, and I feel like he has a pretty good chance to win it. I'm going to throw a question to you. Give me the likelihood winners of each candidate, and we'll see kind of how I feel. I kind of played my card already on that, though.
It's a good question. I do feel like DeJong's probably less likely just because – you're right, national narrative, but also I mean, for me standing out, I can't think of the flashy plays. I mean, he makes the plays and he does a well, good job, but does he do enough to get people?
That's the dangerous thought, you know, because that's when you get into the guys that make the highlight reels. Now that's
sure.
The highlight reels this year, I think are going to win it for Wong. But that's where I think you get a little dangerous, because you start downgrading guys, because actually the ones that make the flashy plays make the most errors.
There's definitely something to that. Now, don't get me wrong, but I think that when you're looking at coaches and managers voting, I think it takes a play, sure. some plays to stand out and stick in their heads.
That's what I'm saying. That's where I feel like I think that's where you get the situation of where the award gets downgraded a little bit. Is what, that's what I meant. Nothing about yours. I'm just saying that idea is where it gets dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, that's why people use the Fielding Bible a lot more now, because it's really statistically based, and it is about who's making the better plays and who's got the most range and all that kind of stuff versus, you know, who's making I think we would say that about Javi Baez, right? He can make some amazing plays, exactly. But then he's botching a lot of plays too.
And historically, those guys that get to the most balls also make the most errors. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I completely agree with that. But you knew where I was going with it. So not to be argumentative on it.
No. I think Wong's a lock.
I agree.
There was besides the fact he played so well this year, there was enough push last year, and his main competition from last year is in the other league. So I think he's a lock. Goldschmidt, probably pretty good, because he's won it before, which helps. Yachty's got we were talking, legendary and the legacy that he's got. I think he's pretty high. I'd be a little bit surprised on Flaherty. I think the pitching is somewhat of just a crapshoot, though. I mean, it's not that he's not worthy. It's just, or that either the other guys who I don't even know, I'd have to look it up, are, I just think that it's going to be, just kind of, that's pretty good. I mean, I don't know that you can handicap it, I guess, in some degree. And Bader, I think Bader's the interesting one, because he's got the, like we say, the flashy plays, and he makes some amazing plays, but he also didn't play down the stretch. He wasn't, and he got devoted and all that. And are they going to hold that against him? I really was a little bit surprised that he got the nomination because of that. So I think the Cardinals probably win. They probably win three of the six.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Interesting. Yeah, well, and it's funny. That's exactly how I would have broken down Bader. That was the one that surprised me the most. I was like, well, yeah, I think he's worthy. I thought his playing time was going to cut it out from him. That's exactly what I thought. Yeah. I was like, I'm not sure he's going to get the nomination just because of the playing time. Wong, I agree with you. I think the ones to me that I think they win are going to be Wong and Molina. I was looking at the Molina competitors. Barnhart's not on there. So I kind of thought, I think Molina has a pretty good chance on this one. Flaherty, I also agree with you on the fact that, it was probably voted on, but I think it's probably voted on the fact that he's a dominant pitcher. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I have a play. Goldschmidt's one of those that I do think is the toss-up. That's if there was a third, I could probably see that happening. And you had a good point in that he's won it before. And it kind of goes into the shortstop to me. I won't be surprised if DeJong wins it at this point. But something tells me that Trevor Story's that guy that hasn't won it yet and has been deserving for several years. And he kind of gets into that Wong category to where he may get the vote ultimately. And that wouldn't really surprise me. Personally, I'm happy that DeJong is in the top three, that he gets mentioned on that, even if it is just, a congratulatory, top three. We know who wins it. We've already gone through that. But I felt like he was deserving. I felt like that got overlooked a lot of the season about how much of a difference he made in the infield. And a guy that's only done – this is only his second full year playing shortstop, and doing it at an amount of innings that really surprised me when I found that out this week. So – the national guys don't understand that. We get to see it day in, day out. But I love the fact that he got the nomination ultimately. But to answer the question, I think it's probably going to be Wong, Molina. And like you said, if there's a third, it would probably be Goldschmidt.
Yeah. Now, it will be interesting. I didn't look. I guess it's they get announced, closer to Thanksgiving, I think. It's mid-November, if I remember. At least it used to be.
Yeah, and it's its own show. So they make sure to clear the World Series on that one.
Yeah, it's. I think he comes out before the MVPs and all that. I'm not 100% sure. They're all in that time period where it's, the World Series gets done, and then there's like a little bit of a gap, and then they start with all the awards. Oh, here we go. Winners announced November 3rd. So yeah, they must be doing it before all the other stuff. So. That's because that's just that's a Sunday. It's a oh, it's a week from Sunday, so won't be that long before we find out. All right. Well, anything more on Gold Gloves, or we want to move on to the off-season stuff?
Oh yeah, I think we wrapped that up. Well, I wanted to get that out. I was super excited when I saw the announcement yesterday, though. You know, that's yeah. I think there's almost everybody on the list that's deserving. It back to you know the Bader deal, which I think is deserving. But it was just a pleasant surprise to see him on there.
Yeah, and it wasn't that nobody missed it that was deserving. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
When you looked at the positions they didn't win, it was third base, which you know, maybe if Tommy Edman had played there more, you might have a case for him being on there. But, you know, one, it doesn't matter because Nolan Arenado's going to win. And
yeah, exactly.
Two, I don't know that Edman's game was that much. He had some good plays, but I don't know if it was quite to Gold Glove level. And then you have Ozuna and you had Fowler, who neither one of those guys, obviously, you know, that was when we talked about weaknesses on this team. Defensively, especially, that's where we were looking. So there's no reason for them to get that. So, but it was really interesting. And I hadn't really given much thought, but it was really kind of cool to see, you know, all this, you know, every time coming out, there was a Cardinal on the list. And,
back to the good old
and
days.
Again, you know, you, and it's right. It's right. And it's like you said, it's not tied to this completely, but when your team makes the fewest errors in the league, there's a good chance you're going to have some guys like that get noticed. So that's good. Is the Cardinals have not had their postseason press conference yet. There seems to be some indication that we're going to wait till the end of the World Series to do that. But that doesn't mean that we can't spend some time looking at some of the early things. And we talked a little bit last week about Ozuna and Wainwright. We'll get to those guys again this week as well. But really wanted to talk about what this 40-man roster is going to look like. Because these are the first decisions that the Cardinals have to make is – you know, figuring out the 40-man and qualifying offers. We'll get to those in a little bit. 40-man roster, though, and if you're not aware some of the technicalities here, most of you are, but just in case you're not, everybody that's on the 60-man or 60-day DL has to be moved back to the 40-man roster at the end of the championship season, which is, you know, a day or so after the World Series is over. In the offseason, there is no 60-day DL. So these guys have to move back. Now, when they're on the 60-day DL, they don't count toward the 40-man. So you've got to find some room for these guys because the 40-man is full, and then you've got these guys to bring back. Now, we're talking about the four guys that are on the 40-day or 60-day are Brett Cecil, Tony Cingrani, Jordan Hicks, and Lane Thomas. Now, Cingrani doesn't count because he's a free agent at the end of the year. More and more I see that. I really don't know about that trade. That trade really just made no sense whatsoever, except for giving Jed Jerko a place to play. But anyway, so you got to add Brett Cecil. You've got to add Lane Thomas, and you've got to add Jordan Hicks, of course. You also have to protect some players that are Rule 5 eligible. And I can't tell you all the Rule 5 rules. You'll have to talk to Kyle Reese for that. But from what I understand, at least in the main guys that they're going to have to talk about are
19, it's 5. That's how you, yeah. Well,
there you go. So you don't even have to, you can talk to Alan. See, Alan knows these things. Yeah.
Yeah,
I know there's always exceptions and things of that nature. But so from what I understand, Elaris Montero, Jake Woodford, and Max Schrock are the guys, and there may be a couple others, but those are the main ones that they have to decide on. So you got to find room for the 60-day guys. You got to find room for those Rule 5 guys. Now, obviously, free agents have come off this list, and so you're freeing up a spot with Marcell Ozuna, with Michael Wacha, Matt Wieters, Adam Wainwright, and of course Cingrani's going out. And but there's still, you got to free up some room. I guess that's what it boils down to. I don't know how much room, but you got to free up some room. And Alan, you and I were talking a little bit before the show. There's some guys that feel like they could just be cut. There's some guys that are probably going to be non-tendered contracts. Where do you look? I mean, and I think you've got it up too, but where are you looking if you're making room for people on this 40-man?
Yeah. Well, let me clarify that real quick too. whenever I say if you're drafted before 19, you get 6 years, that they only hold your rights for 6 years. Then they have to move it on. And that's the same way in the 5 year rule. Yeah, they only own your rights for 5 years. So it's either added to the 40 man or in the Rule 5 draft where you're eligible to go to another organization. That's what it was. I just kind of threw out the years and it didn't make a lot of sense. Right. And like I said, I don't know all about that, but I do, you know, just the baseline rules on it. Cecil is going to be an interesting one to me because they have the 1 year left on the contract and, you know, 2 years have been very disappointing and one were non-existent so far. So I don't know if that's going to be a cut bait type situation. Myers, you feel like that he's been outrighted once already. That would probably be another option that they would just walk away from. And like you pointed out before the show, that Leon may be non-tendered since he's due for a salary arbitration. So those would be the obvious ones. I think that, you know, I know that we're getting ready to get into it, but after that, then you probably have to start looking at playing off what happens as far as the, you know, qualifying offer situation and the Wainwright situation goes, and kind of see how those things play out and you go from there. I didn't dig into a lot of the guys that have to be added so far, so I'm not really sure. And that's one of those to where that takes some setting down and actually having to do a lot more studying than you want, because some of it, there's not a lot of clarity unless someone does all the work for you and puts it out who's going to be on there. So, yeah, these are every, you know, it seems like the last 3 years we both said and everybody said that, you know, there's got to be some room filled in area A or area B, which is always the, you know, the pitching in the outfield. And when you look at it, you look at the pitching roster and it's huge, and then outfield roster just almost equally as big, which is actually quite surprising. So, yeah, they've got their work. They got a lot of work to do. And it's funny where, you know, just passively you look at it and you're like, 40 man, not that big a deal. But that's always really exciting because it can be situations to where you're like, okay, now we kind of see what direction they're leading on this. And some of the top prospects that we thought were the next in line to come up and you may be left off this, you know, I always kind of like this time of the year to where you start figuring out some of those things.
There is one other really easy one, and I don't fault you for missing it because I would have too, and we forget about it. They added Joe Hudson at the end of the year, to the catcher spot, and he got one at bat, which means I have to write an exit interview for him, which is really annoying. But yeah, they're going to, you know, they're not going to keep him on the 40 man roster.
It's funny. I've got the roster up right now and I was looking through it and I was like, well, that's, you know, and I'm surprised that hadn't been announced already type situation. Cause I knew that he was on there just cause they didn't know how healthy Wieters was going to be. So yeah, it was one of those where I clearly missed it because I even looked over him on the roster.
Yeah. It really made no sense anyway, because even with Wieters' health, you know, Kisner was there and Molina did. I mean, Kisner hardly played in that time period, much less, you know, needing a third catcher. If Schilt was going to pinch hit these guys a little bit more, and he did a little bit with Wieters, but still, and maybe you do that, but good for Joe Hudson. I'm sure I think that was, you know, he got a chance to get an at bat in the major league. That's great. But it didn't make a lot of sense at the time just because of the usage. I mean, a normal team, yeah, it made a whole lot of sense. But you've got Yadier Berlin behind the plate, and he's not going to sit out. So why do you need possibly four catchers, and why do you even need three? And sometimes you wonder why you even need two. But anyway, that's another story. I think Myers did not do anything when he was re-added to the 40-man. That made it look like he was worth being re-added to the 40 man. I got to feel like he's an easy cut. I mean, he may be one that they hold on to until they need to, but you know, they also have to clear some room for free agents if they're going to sign any. Leon, I like Dominic Leon. And like you and I were saying, he has spurts where he looks really good and he's had some injury issues, but you know, when you get into arbitration and with all the different arms they have in the bullpen, I mean, maybe they try to settle something, but it seems like that's a guy that would be an easy non-tender and you just, you know, move on from that. You know, maybe that if they keep him, maybe that tells us something about what they're planning with Carlos Martinez. I don't know, just because they need another bullpen arm, but I don't know. Yeah. Other than that, you know, I could see them letting go of Ravello. Cause I don't know. I mean, he was good, but I don't know if he was good enough to, you know, I feel like that's kind of a journeyman kind of guy you can always find. But they might keep him. I don't know. And then, yeah, you get into those outfielders with Garcia. You know, you wonder if they're ever, if Garcia's ever going to do anything, but he's also, you know.
No, I mean, it's funny that this leads into the bigger, not the argument, but the bigger discussion that we had talked about before. They have so many of those guys that are just right there that it makes me, I don't know. I just feel like they all go to spring because I've got to figure something out with these guys. That's one of the things at the trade deadline that always bothered me was you could have eliminated some of these issues just by moving a couple of them. You know what I mean? Whether you thought, I'm not sure where.
Sure.
Obviously, they weren't so enamored with them that they didn't get a shot this year at times. You know what I mean? And I know that some of that turns into, well, where are they going to play? But, you know, I don't know. The roster makeup is really confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I you know, it does make it frustrating when you think about back at the trade deadline where they could have traded Bader or O'Neill with some other people, and we don't know what those pieces were for a guy like Zach Wheeler. If only, I mean, yeah, you wouldn't have, you'd be looking at trying to decide if you wanted to re-sign Wheeler now, but it would free up some of that. And especially with the fact that they didn't use O'Neill down the stretch and Bader, you know, had his issues, you know, why not try to move? And that's, you know, we've talked about it, I think, before a lot. The Cardinals feel like they hold on to Popel until they have no value left, except for Tommy Pham, who they let go of perhaps too early. But I just, you know, they're very hesitant to do that. But if they're going to do anything with this team, and you and I were talking beforehand, we're not sure that they can or will. But if they are, it feels like they're going to have to do it via trade because there's so much of a backlog in a lot of these places already. You can't go out and sign another outfielder because where is they going to play?
Yeah. It's a very odd situation. No. I agree with you. It's just it's an odd situation they put themselves in.
Which brings us to the free agents that the Cardinals have right now. Now, you know, we talked about them coming off the 40-man roster, but if the Cardinals re-sign them, obviously they have to go right back on there. Let's go from least likely to most likely. I mean, obviously, Singrani's not coming back, and that's fine. Let's see. I guess the most likely to return is Wainwright. We still haven't heard anything there, but it, I mean, we talked about this last week too, but it still feels like if he wants back, the team's going to have him back.
Yeah, completely agree. That's there's a slight surprise, slightly surprised that we haven't heard one way or the other. You know what I mean? And it's funny because I know that Danny Mac has pressed and pulled on it. You hear Saxon pressed on it and stuff like that. And no one really has an answer, and they basically send us like we do, like, hey, if he's coming back to pitch, he'll come back. And he pitched so well last year, he has to come back. But, you know, it's just a huge question mark. So I think there's more thought given into it, unless there's contract negotiation going on right now, you know, of another incentive-based or how much do you want, you know, type situation. So you never know. But I feel like he comes back.
I think – boy, I haven't sat down for the post, and I know there was one at Redbird Rants this week. I think our friend Uncle Frank wrote that one. But you know, there's got to be that feeling of I can walk away with a good taste in my mouth. You know, I mean the team didn't do what he wanted, but his postseason, it wasn't his fault. The postseason, he had a good season. But he's kind of come back next year at, you know, 1 year older with, you know, the idea that, you know, he really had to rely a lot on command and placement and smart pitching, you know, can he do that again? Is he physically able to do that, you know, at that level? Because even just a, you know, a tick off could start having things beat around. But there, on the flip side of that, there's got to be that pool of one to play with these guys, play with Yadier Molina one more year, especially if there's any indication that Yadi would retire at the end of 2020, which I don't think there is. Yeah, I'd be really surprised. But, you know, and the idea that maybe this team can, you know, go farther. Now, boy, if I'm Adam Wainwright, I might say, look, guys, I'm interested, but I want to see what else you're going to do. Because if we come back to this team as it's currently constructed, I don't know that it does any better than it did this year and probably worse. So, you know, is that something he wants to deal with? I think there's a lot of different things there, but it's really just going to come down to, you know, how he feels and if he's got that, you know, itch to play again and wants to make sure he doesn't leave anything on the table. And I think that's, some players want to make sure they've used every opportunity. Some people want to walk away knowing that they left on their terms. And I don't know which one Adam Wainwright
is. I agree with that. It's the only thing that I would even question about what you just said at all is he's so positive that I don't know if he feels that way about the ball club. I feel like they could win day in, day out, you know, and that's where that's about the only thing. But yeah, I completely agree with you. And there's one of those to where, selfishly, I want him back just because it's Wainwright and he's a stud and he was so successful last year. But, you know, I applaud any man that can walk away the way that he did after coming back for, we thought he was shot. I mean, there's a record of text messages between you and I where I thought he was done whenever he was done in San Diego. Whenever Maddox came out to get him and they were laughing like, hey, this is all I've got, I'm sorry. And it was kind of one of those touching moments. I was like, we're never going to see him again. And then last year he comes back. And then this year, you know what? If he would have started game two of the playoff, I would have been impressed. You know what I'm saying? So, or I wouldn't have been surprised. Yep. So that's coming a long way, you know, from a team last year that was lost to a division winner and a team that won a series. And a lot of it was due to him. And, you know, if anybody wants to go out on a high note, decides to do that, well, you know, that I'd be a bigger fan of him if he did that than if he came back. And I know that sounds crazy, like I'm not a fan anyway, but you know what I'm saying. I'm just like, that speaks to speaks volumes to me if somebody that's willing to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm probably 60-40 that he comes back. But I know he's got a lot of plans for post baseball. I know he's got some, you know, really some charity work and some things that are really going to help a lot of people, I think. And I could understand him wanting to, you know, feeling like he's ready to get started on that too. So, but if he'll come back on a similar deal than what the Cardinals had him this year, then that, you know, would be great. Matt Wieters may be an interesting one. You know, I was listening to the Seeing Red podcast with Will Leach and Marty Nicholas. And they were talking about the fact they thought Wieters may have played himself into maybe more of a full-time role, maybe at least of a place where he could be a backup that played more often. And I guess it boils down to, what do the Cardinals think of Andrew Kisner? I mean, are they willing to have Kisner be the backup for Yadier Molina? Are they going to rest Yadier Molina more so Kisner can play? It feels like there's a lot of different interacting things going on in the catching spot.
Well, and it's funny, I'm going to make this a line that's actually probably, I promise you this isn't a line out of a comedy, so don't laugh me out of here, but is this not the guy that they're finally going to start grooming a little bit? You know what I mean? I know we've heard that for four or five different players now, but is this the one, is Kisner the one that they're going to be like, okay, you're going to be the backup. Next year, you're going to play a little bit more, and then we're going to see how it goes from there on. You know, even saying that to myself, it sounds stupid because it's probably just not very, very realistic. So I really don't know. I do kind of feel that way with Wieters, though, that he probably did show enough that he'll probably move on. And I don't know if that's money that they want to tie up. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the Kisner question is incredibly interesting. I really don't know what to say. You know, I kind of thought it would be the Kelly situation, but I was okay with trading him, you know. And then Kisner last year really made that move offensively. I think, you know, he's always shown that he can hit, but defensively has improved enough to where he brought himself into the conversation. Then it turned into he overstepped Kelly into maybe that top backup role or the next guy in line role. All that being said, Molina is going to play as long as he can, and that may be another 5 years. So I don't know. That's a good question. I would be surprised to see Wieters back, but I'm not necessarily sure that means anything toward Kisner.
I will say, I mean, yeah, you had Kelly and Kisner, and that it made sense. You could do what they've done, and they could trade Kelly, or they could bring in other backups and stuff like that because you had Kisner. But I know there's some prospects, but I don't think there's anybody behind Kisner that's really obviously, oh, this guy could be the guy that takes over for Yadier Molina. And so I think you've got to get Kisner in more next year. And I think that means having a discussion with Yadier Molina that says, I'm sorry, you don't actually run this team. And as great as it is to have Yadi out there, and I still think you want him out there a majority of the time, mainly because of how he deals with the pitching staff and things like that. It's, you've got to start passing that baton. And that means, you know, Ander Kisner starting 50 games next year or 40 games or something, but some sort of regular rotation. And I know I've heard arguments against being a, you know, personal catcher. But even if it's just, look, you're going to take every Tuesday off, you know, and whoever's up, you know, and Kisner's going to play every Tuesday or something. I don't know what it is, but there's got to be something. And I will say that may be the only way Yadier Molina retires at the end of this year, because it may be that if he plays less games, you know, he may start to feel like it's time for him to walk the way out the door. And I don't think, at least right now, I don't think Yadier Molina is going to play with anybody else. I feel like he said that before, but I also think that it's very possible that the Cardinals, if they offended him, he could go and play someplace else just to spite. So, because I believe that Yadier's a very proud man, as we've said many a time. So, but it really gets to the point that you have to start doing that, just because you don't. I mean, Yadier Molina's offense this year was okay, at times really good. But for the most part, average, and you know, it's going to not keep getting better. I mean, it's going to start slacking. We've already talked about his defense sliding, and suddenly you're going to wake up and Yadier Molina is an average or below average catcher. And you've got to have some plan for that. And if that's 2 years from now and Ander Kisner's moved on because he can't sit, you know, and really use his skills, then, you know, what do you do?
Oh yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it's a it's one of those situations too, to where that's where it gets a little frustrating on the Molina front, is we've seen how well he performs with more rest. So it would make sense for him to set a little bit more. I mean, we've seen it, you know, the last 3 or 4 years. If he gets banged up a little bit injury wise and he's out for a couple of weeks, to where they kind of base it where he's forced to be out of the lineup, he comes back and performs well. I don't know if you're ever going to see a true timeshare, and I don't know if we've ever even really seen an 80-20 timeshare, you know, as long as he's been the catcher. No. But I think if you do, you'd see a better player. And, you know, offensively, if I feel like you're a pretty good team when you have a Yadier Molina hit 6th or 7th, not necessarily 5th. You know, if you can lengthen that lineup in some way by adding somebody and then get a little more sharing of time with a guy, and if you feel like Kisner is that guy to learn on the fly and you can split it, well, I think you can become a pretty good team. But yeah, those conversations, you know, probably aren't going to be fun. They have several conversations this offseason which may not be fun and may not be comfortable, and you know, Molina's just the top of that list.
I will say, if it's not next year, whatever year it is, I hope Yadier Molina announces his retirement at the beginning of the year, because I think that Yadi is the first Cardinal that I can remember since Ozzy, who didn't announce his till late on, that would be would get one of those farewell tours, you know, where every place they're giving him something. Or I think it would. I mean, he's got that kind of presence around the league, and he's got that kind of legend. I would like to see that kind of response. Now, whether that'll happen or not, it's a different story. But
that's it. And it's funny, on this week's Scoops, Gould said basically the exact same thing that you just said, that it'll probably be a 1-year extension that they announced this year, and if not a 2, And that final year, he expects him to announce that it's it to get that full walk away. You know what I'm saying? That he deserves. And that's kind of that's scripted right now. But Gould made it sound like that maybe 5 years.
Well, I mean, because he said when he signed this 3 year deal, that 2020 was his last year. He was not having another contract after this. And I know he's played better than he expected and all that kind of stuff. I think he probably even thought that his skills might have declined or the team might have moved on a little bit. But, you know, none of us expect that to be the case now. And, you know, he hasn't said no, but he hasn't, you know, he's kind of left the door open for him to continue to play. So, you know, even if he signed a 2 year extension or this year, I wouldn't know that to say, oh yes, he's going to be done at the end of 2022. I don't know that I could say that. So
I fully expect to see a 40-year-old Yanni Molina catch him. I mean, it would honestly surprise me at this point if we don't.
I would hope by that point he's the backup, but you never know.
By backup, I would expect to see him on opening day.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? So I think you and I are in agreement on that hopefully there's a better inning share than what we've seen, but I would still see him probably more primarily in some of those spots.
The only opening days Yadier Molina are going to miss for the rest of his life are the two or three right after he retires, but before he gets in the Cardinal Hall of Fame. They may just skip the whole voting process for him.
They don't change the rules for him.
They might. If he retired, they might just put him straight in. Anyway. All right. Well, two more, and then we'll wrap it for this week, and maybe leave some possibilities of what the team could do for next show. Michael Walker, I don't think there's any real doubt here that the Cardinals are just going to, you know, part ways. Could they look to bring him back on some sort of small contract? I guess possibly just because of what he means, but Cardinals have never committed to Michael Walker. Michael Walker's had his own issues. You know, he's just going to wind up someplace that I don't know where he winds up. I don't feel like he gets anywhere but like a 1 year contract somewhere, especially the way the markets are now.
That's one where you can kind of see the writing on the wall mm-hmm. all year. And that is like, hey, we're willing to walk away. Someone will pick you up. You know, that's just the way it's going to go. So, I'm not sure. I feel like someone would give him a flyer for more innings. I love Walker, and it's going to suck to see him go. Yeah. But you know, his time in St. Louis is done. I mean, I don't think that would even in a situation where Wainwright didn't come back, I feel like they would go and upgrade more than bring him back.
Yeah, just. I can't see how they would bring him back. Like I said, I don't think Michael Walker's market's going to be very strong just because of his health issues. And some of the, you know, he pitched well in spurts. He's doesn't feel like he's much more than a 5-inning pitcher now. Pirates, somebody like that may give him a 2-year deal. And that would be really weird to see Michael Walker on a regular basis on somebody else's team. I can't see that.
Well, and I always look at the situation like Walker too, of one of the deals to where he's pitched well enough that a team like the Rangers, his home state, could give him a run. You know what I mean? Something like that. I've always thought that those are the ones that kind of make sense for the guys to kind of go home because he's kind of got a history there. They're opening the new ballpark. I don't know how much money they're going to spend or what they have, but I mean, they've kind of got an unrecognizable rotation and you can kind of bring in a guy like that and hope for the best type deal. So I wouldn't think that he would have trouble getting a gig, but you know, I also didn't think there would be free agent signing in March either.
Right. I mean, like I said, normally I'd agree. You're right. In the normal market, somebody would give him, you know, cause he's a veteran, because he's, still fairly young, getting kind of baseball middle age, I guess, but still not to the end of his career, obviously. It feels like somebody normally would have given him a year, 2 years, maybe even three, even though his most recent stuff has been kind of iffy. But the way the market is now, just really, really difficult to see. And that brings us to our last guy, because when you're talking about the market, I think that's a big thing. And we're talking about Marcell Ozuna. Now, you and I have both talked about it. It feels like it's pretty obvious the Cardinals give him a qualifying offer and then see where that goes. Now, there were some on Twitter this week saying they wouldn't even extend him the qualifying offer because I guess they really feel like there's a good chance that he'll take it. And they don't expect a team will actually sign him if the pick is attached. Well, what's your thoughts there?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny. You know, Mark Saxon put that out in an article or one of his posts during the playoffs that the Cardinals may be hesitant to do that for that same reason. You know, I'm not sure what his market will be. I can't imagine that he'd be – he is a mid-market guy, but I feel like he's done enough where he could catch on with somebody. I don't know years and money if – teams are going to be willing to go much more than that qualifying offer anyway. Not years wise, of course, but money wise, maybe not.
Right.
So I don't know. I mean, here's the thing. I feel like how much does he cloud the system coming back for a year if they do offer it to him?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? That's
right.
I feel like you're losing such a bat as is anyway. I'm not the biggest fan of signing him long term for several reasons, and I love Ozuna as a player, but I feel like you have to extend the offer. I feel like it's funny how it's gone from he may accept this offer during the season to there's no chance he's going to get multi-year to now it's like they're not even going to offer it. And I feel like you can walk away cleanly. This is going to be a roller coaster ride until he does. I'm glad that this is one of the first things to get resolved. Because
yeah, I mean,
it's going to be a strange offseason if it's not.
Yeah, I mean – we've watched it on Twitter, right? We watched the season of like, oh, Ozuna. And then he'll go on those stretches and the people are like, well, they got to sign Ozuna because, you know, who else can fill up this? And then he'll go to a slump like he did in September and people are like, no, you know, let him go. And, you know, it is difficult to figure out where you're going to replace that production. And I think that's something we could talk about in a future show. But, you know, yeah, I think you're right. I think, you know, that's the kind of the motto in baseball, right? There's no such thing as a bad 1-year contract. You know, maybe that gives them the confidence to trade a Tyler O'Neill or something else in some sort of package, get rid of a couple outfielders that just aren't going to have a place. They're going to get stuck if he comes back. I don't know, but I think that if you can get a guy that can hit you close to 30 home runs for what, $17.8 million or whatever that qualifying offer is, and with no real long-term strings attached in, he's 28, 29. I mean, he's in that area. I just don't see the downside in offering him. I mean, I think there is maybe a better than normal chance that he accepts. I still don't think he would, but there is that idea that he said he's very interested in playing in St. Louis again, that he wants to play with, you know, Yachty and all those other guys. And, you know, I think that, and there's the argument he could take the qualifying offer, then reach the market the next year with no pick attached. But on the flip side of that, you know, we're getting closer and closer to when that CBA is going to come up. And you don't know necessarily, you know, what the market's going to look like around this, a possibility of a strike. It might be he might want to see if he can't get a 2 or 3 year deal now and lock that in versus trying to go year to year. So I don't know. I mean, the fact that he switched from Scott Boras to Yadier Molina's agent does probably make it more likely that he'd accept the qualifying offer, but I'm still really hesitant to believe that a guy like that would accept it. If that's the case, I think that just tells you how much that the market is.
Yeah, and that's a scary situation. The guys that are, you know what may speak more to the system being broken is the fact that it's down for the first time. That's what I think is pretty amazing. You sign two guys with the money that they did, and the average salary still goes down. That's a little troublesome to me in my eyes. It's funny. You know, I've had my issues with Ozuna, like the tardiness last year. That was the one that I kind of went off on it. But overall, as a player, I like Ozuna.
Yeah.
I think he plays hard. I think he runs bases really well. I think he's a better defender than he gets advertised, but not as good as he was ever portrayed, if that makes sense. And I think he's I understand that, you know, the 29 bombs and, you know, his what he brings to the plate, numbers-wise, doesn't look that intimidating. But I will tell you, he did alter the lineup. And that's a guy that you have to account for in the lineup, which the Cardinals simply didn't have and had since Holiday. You know, you have two of them in Goldschmidt and Ozuna, and you've got a plan around that. And I like having that. You know, it's one of those. If O'Neill were to replace him, I'm not so sure. I mean, you got to stay away from O'Neill's power, but you know you have a chance of striking him out as well. All that being said, one, and this is really going to make me come off looking like a sheep on this deal, but for a guy that watches them day in, day out, McLaughlin is all on board on not only the qualifying offer, but extending him. He goes, that's one guy that he's actually pissed when he's not in the lineup. He shows up to play every day and plays hard every day. And that surprises me because I heard things two years ago when he was first here that necessarily wasn't the case. And when Dan says that, I believe it. And I don't know. I mean, I think that you're giving away a pretty big piece. And like I said, I'm not a big long-term extension candidate for him, but I don't see the downside in the qualifying offer either.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it a lot about different people. Going back to like Lance Lynn, you know, it wasn't the fact that they didn't want him for a year. It was the fact they didn't want him for 5 years. You know, they didn't like what that fourth or fifth year was going to look like. To get a guy like Ozuna for a year seems to work pretty well. I mean, they are locked in on a lot of players right now, and we'll get to that probably in the next show. We'll talk about, you know, a situation where I don't, and you and I both don't feel like they're as flexible, and it feels like they're going to really regret their inactivity last year because I think they had a better chance of fixing their team last year than they do this year. But, yeah. You know, to like I said, that 1 year deal still frees you up. I mean, you're not, I know all of us, including me, are really excited about Dylan Carlson, and he very well may be ready and spring training, but he may not be. And if you've got Ozuna, he doesn't have to be. I mean, right now, the bar to start without Ozuna, the bar to start's lower, much lower. You know, he only has to beat out, you know, Tyler O'Neill, who we saw if he gets a good stretch, he could be good. But you're like you said, he's got his issues. You know, Lane Thomas, Randy Orozarena, right now. I mean, those kind of guys that we don't necessarily know a lot about. We don't know a lot about Carlson either, so his bar doesn't have to be as high. But if you've got Ozuna, Carlson really has to do something in the spring to make this team, and that makes your team better if he can do that. So I don't know if I explained that real well, but I, you know.
No. I think you did. I mean, it's one of those where it's so convoluted that it's easy to get confused. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's one of those you buy yourself a little more time if Ozuna accepts that offer. Because, I mean, there's a reason Carlson played center all year.
Right.
You know what I mean? We know what that is. So that can be an option. So I wouldn't – it's one of those to where if you let Ozuna walk, then you're just like, okay, O'Neill, you get a shot, but Carlson's coming quickly. You know, one of those type deals where if Ozuna's in the lineup, it's like, okay, guys, you know, performance plays, so let's see what you can do. I'm in step with you 100% on that.
Yeah, again, I don't think he will, but I just can't see a downside to offering the qualifying. Because especially for a team that really likes the draft picks. Now, again, to get a draft pick, somebody has to sign him. And, you know, Ozuna, I feel like Ozuna may be the kind of guy that's not going to get, like we said, he's not going to get $30 million a year. He may not get $20 million a year. But he might be a guy that you can might sign a three-year contract for $20 million a year, even with a pick attached. I don't know. I don't think it's, you know, that pick has been a drag on people, you know, and we've seen people like Kimbrel and Keuchel and, you know, just even some of the big games, maybe last year, although they went ahead and signed anyway. We've seen some of those guys linger on. I think Ozuna might be in that little bit of a sweet spot where teams don't have to spend just a ton to get him, relatively speaking. And he's worth enough that they're willing to give up a pick. Now, we'll see. May not be. But I could see that being a case. And again, if you don't get the pick, if they don't sign, I just don't see Ozuna sitting out till June of next year, though. I just can't do that. But I wouldn't have seen Keuchel do it either, and he did. So
it's tumultuous times in that. You know, it's different than where it's been, you know, and that's a little bit scary.
Yeah,
you know, sure. What's funny, just kind of thinking of what, you know, perception of Ozuna and what other teams may think. I found it interesting how Brian Anderson, and if anybody didn't know, Brian Anderson, who does the TBS playoff games, that is Milwaukee's Danny Mack. He does, you know, he's their guy on the Milwaukee Fox Sports area, and he's very good. He didn't miss any opportunities to poke holes in Ozuna's game defensively, and brought it up all the time, you know, and said, you know, he's a dangerous bat. He's a guy you have to plan for, but defensively, he's just not the same as he used to be, and he can't throw at all. And that makes me think that almost every team says that because, you know, I've heard other organizations talking about the scouting reports that you can run on Ozuna. So, you know, to me, that sounds like he's getting pigeonholed to be a DH, and that's a really dangerous.
Yeah, because that limits your opportunities quite a bit. You know, that said,
in those teams, it's fair. DH only, they're expecting 45
home. But that said, I mean, they're the way offense is right now, you know, of course, next year's going to be interesting. And how do teams plan for, you know, this idea that, you know, maybe the ball's not as lively next year. You know, do you want a guy like Ozuna who's hit 30 home runs even in a year that wasn't lively in the last couple of years? Or do you just hope that player X, who had such a great 2019, that's the real him? I don't know. I think that's going to be an interesting calculus for some front offices.
Sure. And you know, what's funny is I know that they take into account parks, you know, on the park adjusted on their runs created and stuff like that now too. And the one that always stands out to me, you know, I feel like Milwaukee made the best move ever. And you're going to say, of course they did. He was the MVP. But I think that when you looked at Yelich and you saw that dude hit 40 doubles a year in a ballpark that the ball doesn't fly out, if we can put him in our ballpark, he's going to hit 40 homers a year. And that's exactly how it's happened. And it makes me wonder if in a situation where would Ozuna hit 40 bombs in a Milwaukee? You know, it's crazy. Not that I'm saying
right,
the same
right,
player,
right.
But you know what I mean? It's just one of those to where I wonder how much the ballpark does play a player role.
Yeah, something to find out. So anyway, well, we've gone our hour this week. We'll get back to it maybe next week. We'll see when the World Series ends and when that press conference is. We may wait a week or so, but we'll kind of get into what the team needs to do, what they can do, which are maybe two definitely different things. But until then, that's Alan. I'm Daniel. Good night.
Good night.
Suter from the belt to the plate. A swing and a miss, and that's a winner. That's a winner. A World Series winner for the Cardinals.